thank you for subscribing to Podcast One Premium.
He's considered the greatest broadcaster in wrestling history. And now, WWE Hall of Famer Jim Ross brings his legendary voice and his famous friends to the podcast world. Welcome to the Ross Report.
And just like that, another episode of Slobberknocker Audio is off and running, folks. And today, my old broadcast partner from WWE, Todd Grisham, is going to be joining me. Todd's a very busy guy, doing a lot of kickboxing, working some for USC. We'll talk about his run in WWE. He was a good driver for me, I can tell you that. His time at ESPN and all the things he's doing right now. So good conversation coming up with Todd Grisham, who, by the way, does a very mean Vince McMahon impersonation, one of the many in the wrestling business that do. Maybe we'll get Todd to do that for us. But in any event, Todd Grisham here today, and we'll get to him momentarily. But first, I'm in England right now, as a matter of fact. As I record this, I'm sitting in my hotel room in England, Milton Keynes, where we were for Sunday night's pay-per-view for What Culture Pro Wrestling. And I'll talk more about that momentarily as well. But before we get rolling here, I got a favor to ask you guys. As you know, we're able to keep this show free thanks to the sponsors. And that's how it works, real simple. And so to ensure that this podcast stays free for you guys to download, can you please help me out with a little quick survey online? Many of you are doing it. I appreciate it very much. Just go to podcastone.com/my survey. The survey is short and completely anonymous. And your responses will help us find the perfect sponsors for this show. We can't do it without them, but we want the right sponsors to be here. And also, and this is important, you keep the number of ads to a minimum. So help us out here if you can. It's just a couple minutes of your time to fill out the survey. We can keep this Ross Report free to download. All you got to do is go to Podcast One. That's podcastone.com/my survey. Or go to podcastone.com and click on the survey banner. How ingenious is that? A survey banner. Who'd have thunk it? It's a big help to us and this show, and I really do appreciate it. So right now, as you all know, you've been waiting with bated breath, whatever the hell that means. It's time to let you know what's on my mind. Starting with saddened to hear a few days ago the passing of Chavo Guerrero Sr. Chavo died of the liver cancer, we're told, which was only diagnosed about 30 days ago, which is just so tragic. Only 68 years of age. I know you young bucks out there saying, well, he's an old dude, man, 68. Hey, when you're 65, by God, 68 ain't old. Trust me. So Chavo was a hell of a hand. You know, ahead of his time in many ways. Bilingual, had a college education. He was a great amateur wrestler. And the very first guy I ever saw do a moonsault, and man, he can nail it. It wasn't a high spot. It was a finish, much like a DDT, but don't get me started. So Chavo passing, our condolences to his family and his friends, and, of course, his son, Chavo Jr., Sal Jr., and his family. Wish everybody the best in this trying time. But Chavo was really good, probably 5'9", 5'8", 5'9". But he had a main event once with Ernie Ladd, who was 6'9". Ernie was a big-time heel. They had a big main event in Los Angeles that Chavo actually went over, and the old-timers tell me it was a hell of a match with a 6'9 guy and a 5'9 guy, and people believed every moment of it because of how the two men worked. So our condolences to the family, the friends, and the fans of Chavo Guerrero for his passing at age 68. He will be missed. And I'd also, on a more pleasant note, like to congratulate my friend Dwayne Johnson, The Rock, one of my greatest signees ever in WWE, for being named the Entertainer of the Year by the NAACP Image Awards, a massive award for The Rock. Good dude, deserves everything that comes his way. I'm so glad that we still stay in contact, and I'm excited, too, that he's doing the movie with the Page's family in the UK, the Knights. That ought to be a dandy. And I know that Tessa Blanchard is the stunt double for Paige in this movie. Paige is not in the movie, by the way. It's not about Paige. It's about her family. That's kind of a misconception out there. But in any event, Congrats, Rock. I'm proud of you, buddy. You always represent well. And I thought we represented well on Sunday night in Milton Keynes. I had never been to Milton Keynes before. May never come back. I have no idea. Nice place, though. WCPW, What Culture Pro Wrestling, had their True Destiny pay-per-view on Sunday night at the ice rink. And it was a lot of fun. We had a real good show, great crowd. Crowd always helps make the show good or better, whatever. Crowd did wonderfully well. I like the crowd. Unique atmosphere, but a hell of a show. Well booked. The talents worked hard. And I was really proud to be a part of it with Matt Stryker as my broadcast partner. The two of us sitting at ringside were able to broadcast the show. I like it not being a three-man booth. Heck, I watched Elimination Chamber Sunday night when I got back to my room on my iPad on the WWE Network, and four broadcasters, well, that's a crowded field, let me tell you. So Stryker and I were just the two guys, and we had fun. I want to tell you, the Kurt Angle, Alberto El Patron match was classic. It was the main event, closed the show, and boy, did they close the show. Kurt Angle, I had lunch with him on Saturday and breakfast with him on Sunday. He's feeling great, looking great, clear eyes, really in terrific physical condition. And people say, how does Kurt stay in that great condition? Let me tell you something. For lunch on Saturday, he had a damn chicken Caesar salad and some boiled eggs. For breakfast, he had more boiled eggs. So he's eating clean. He didn't eat the yellows. He ate the egg whites, boiled egg whites. Good God Almighty. Wow. So in any event, he's looking great, feeling good, excited about being inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame. And I don't know who's going to induct him. My sense is it might be John Cena. Kurt didn't confirm that by any stretch, but just talking about several guys and people that Kurt had on his mind, I think maybe Cena might be the guy. We'll find out. It'd be a great choice. But I look forward to that. But Kurt had a wonderful match with Alberto El Patron. Alberto, I told him this after the show, I've seen him wrestle a lot of times. I don't think I've ever seen him in a better match in any level, anywhere, against anybody. So that speaks to the crowd. It speaks to Kurt Angle. It speaks to the booking. A lot of positives there. So if you haven't seen that show, I strongly suggest you check it out. Drew Galloway, who's really evolved into a top hand, successfully defended his WCPW title against Joe Hendry, who, of course, at the end of the night made his presence felt involving Kurt Angle. I don't want to spoil that if you haven't seen it. I love the opening match of the night. Ricochet and Will Ospreay had an amazing match, considering that in the very, very early going, like in the first minute or so, the top rope broke. So they had to wrestle their match live, no net, with two ropes, the middle rope and the bottom rope, and they pulled it off. Really, hats off to those guys, two really, really good hands, and I really enjoyed being able to broadcast their bout. The Zack Sabre Jr., another kid that I've been wanting to watch work, really talented, had a chance to visit with him at length after the show was over. Very smart, bright young man, and I had a lot of fun talking with him about wrestling and his philosophy and his goals. It's refreshing. Young kid, really got a big future. I'll be shocked if someday if WWE doesn't sign Zack Sabre Jr. It'd be foolish not to. There's no reason to not sign him that I'm aware of, other than contractual and things of that nature. The talents, by and large, whether it be the ladder match, the I Quit match, the ladies match, all the matches, the talents were unselfish. They worked hard. There was no agendas. And that was real refreshing. So we also, by the way, Paige was there. Paige, WWE's Paige, was there. She was at ringside for the main event involving her man, Alberto. She looked good and was in great spirits, had her successful neck surgery. Really enjoyed chatting with her. And she's in a real good place right now, it seems like, which I'm very, very happy for. So at least she's pain-free, by and large. And so that's a good thing. We also talked on Sunday about the Pro Wrestling World Cup involving 64 wrestlers from 8 different countries. The eliminations and the qualifiers will be taking place in the next 5 months. The finals will be in August over, I think now, 4-day period of time, 4 days in August, I believe. to finish out this tournament to determine the first ever Professional Wrestling World Cup winner. And some really strong promotions are involved. A lot of cooperation. It's kind of cool. It reminds me of the old days of the territory days. And it's kind of like the Jim Crockett Cup back in the day when Jim Crockett Promotions and Cowboy Bill Watts' organization, UWF, co-promoted the Superdome for the Jim Crockett Memorial Tag Team Cup. And so I see cooperation there. That's a good thing. So we'll keep you updated on that. The World Cup. Here's the key thing. You can see all of the World Cup matches for free, and that's a hell of a good deal. That's a great thing from What Culture there, and it's on their YouTube channel. If you don't subscribe to their YouTube channel, by the way, I think that's free. It's really a cool deal. They have over 1 million subscribers, and this company is growing ostensibly in a very fast way. So all the matches in the World Cup, including the finals that I think Matt Stryker and I are going to call, will be free on What Culture's YouTube channel. So check that out. Go ahead and subscribe. It costs you nothing. There's a lot of really cool product on there, and some of the biggest stars in the wrestling business compete for WCPW on a regular basis. So we'll keep you updated on that for sure. I watched the Elimination Chamber, and it wasn't easy because it was from 1 a.m. to 4 a.m. Here in England, and when it was on the WWE Network on my iPad. So I had to fight it a little bit because it was the end of a long day, but I wanted to be able to report to you guys what I saw and what I felt on it. So, you know, basically speaking, it was a one-bout show going in. The Elimination Chamber was the featured match, obviously, hence the name, duh. But I thought that the show overall was about a B. It's very subjective. And don't hang your hat on my B. I thought it was a pretty decent show. The undercard had its moments, especially I thought the sleeper match tonight was Luke Harper and Randy Orton. I have said here on this program that Luke Harper, I believe, is underutilized, at least in my opinion. I think WWE can creatively get much more out of Luke Harper than they have, and maybe they are, and maybe they will. But in any event, I think Luke Harper proved that he could hang with a top guy like Randy Orton very easily. And I was very, really, really impressed with their match, and hats off to both guys. The surprise of the night for me was Naomi winning the women's title at SmackDown. Good for her. I've always liked her. She's a very nice, polite young lady, a really good athlete, former Orlando Magic cheerleader, very, very athletic. I noticed that the first time I laid eyes on her down in Tampa back in the day before Orlando opened at the Performance Center. Really a good hand. And I'm happy for her and hope that she gets a nice run out of this title situation. The chamber was well-booked, I thought. Well-booked. I enjoyed the order. I thought it was very provocative the way that they started the match with Cena and AJ Styles. Made sense to me. I thought they saved Baron Corbin well. I thought The Miz fulfilled his role very successfully, effectively. So everybody in Ambrose had a good outing. These guys put a lot of their bodies on the line. That's a hell of a hard structure to work in, let me tell you. There's not a guy that ever wrestled in it that won't tell you the same thing. It's not a lot of fun. And guy, if somebody tells you it's a lot of fun, they're lying. It ain't. But these guys worked hard and had a good chamber. Bray Wyatt won the WWE title, as many of you already know. It looks like he'll wrestle Randy Orton at WrestleMania. Kind of what people expected. I don't have a problem with that. I can't wait for somebody to say, well, it's too predictable. Jeez, come on. It's too predictable. Yeah, and you know, here's another thing. The day after Monday is Tuesday. Boy, by God, that's predictable too. Come on. It's pro wrestling. Predictability is not necessarily a bad thing if it's the right thing to do. Change for change's sake is stupid. And I'm glad that WWE steered the course. Bray Wyatt, I said all along that the Firefly entrance is not a heel entrance. You can't have positive audience participation. In other words, non-booing with the lighters and all that stuff, the cell phones, wherever the hell it is, and it not be considered a babyface. It's audience participation that they have fun doing. You're not supposed to have fun with villains. You can say, well, I'm a villain fan. Okay, well, good for you. I'm glad. But the bottom line of it is that Bray Wyatt has the potential to be a main event level character babyface along the lines of a Jake the Snake Roberts. The Undertaker's a character babyface. Dusty Rhodes is a character babyface. They're non-traditional heroes. I think Bray Wyatt has that potential. So, but in any event, I congratulate him for winning the WWE title. He beat people with his finish. God, what a concept, huh? What a concept that they weren't kicking out of Sister Abigail. John Cena didn't kick out of Sister Abigail. AJ Styles didn't kick out of Sister Abigail. It made, you know, just made so much more sense. And think about it, if they hadn't, you'd have been let down. I would have been let down. It was, oh, come on. It's just so enough is enough. If I see another talent kick out of a DDT, I'm going to sew the sheets. Come on, man. It makes no sense. So in any event, Bray Wyatt's the new champion. Congratulations to him. And we'll see where that goes. I'm sure WWE is going to want him to be the heel in this equation with Randy Orton. But does it have to be? Is that what the audience wants? And I think that, you know, upon further review, if you listen to what the audience wants, I think they're going to say they kind of dig Bray Wyatt's act. Hey, they welcome him to the ring. They're not angry at him. So they've got the foundations there, so why not run with it? So in any event, WrestleMania is taking shape, looking to be good, really a good show, I believe. I still think that Bill Goldberg beats Kevin Owens for the Universal title. I still think that Goldberg and Brock Lesnar will be for the Universal title at WrestleMania. And I still think that Lesnar wins. And then hopefully, if my fantasy booking is on target, then Lesnar would have a program build to a big match with Samoa Joe. Samoa Joe and Brock Lesnar is a match I want to see. Making it for the Universal title adds a little bit more intrigue, another log to the fire, some more good with barbecue sauce to the ribs, and it's all good. So we'll see how that comes out. And we'll know more as these TVs hit about WrestleMania. But bottom line, it should be a pretty good card. I'm looking forward to it, and I think there's some real key matchups there. And then the big question is, what does AJ do? What do some of these other guys do? Will the Seth Rollins Triple H match actually happen? I think that probably will. And that could be a really good match, too, by the way. So it looks like it's going to be a very heavy in-ring wrestling show. And if all the extemporaneous things, the backstage bits, the booking of multiple people to get them on the card, all that stuff. You know, I don't believe it's – WWE's not a benevolent organization. They're a for-profit organization. And it's not everybody's right to be on WrestleMania. Just because you're on the team doesn't mean you're on the starting lineup. So I'm of the belief that the show should be booked strictly for the fans and the TV audience and hopefully take care of the talents along the way. But we'll see how that card shapes up. I do understand getting more people on the show, a big battle royal or multiple-person tag matches, all this stuff, but I think that the card should be booked with the fans in mind first, and I'm sure that's what they'll do. Hopefully they will. We mentioned Orlando. My Ringside with Jim Ross shows are starting to take shape as well. We're going to be at the Plaza Live on Saturday and Sunday, April 1 and 2. That's the WrestleMania weekend. The VIP meet-and-greet function starts at noon, goes to 2 o'clock. At 2:30, my show starts at Plaza Live. I'll have friends with me. I'll have guests on stage, and these shows will have themes. And we're formulating our themes. We're getting our guests together. Everything is coming together very nicely. But here's the key thing. You can't come if you don't have a ticket. And tickets are on sale at TicketFly.com. Pretty simple. TicketFly, F-L-Y, TicketFly, one word, .com. No matter where you are, here in the UK or in the States or wherever, Australia, wherever you're coming in from, I'd love to see you again. Tickets start at $25, so it's a good value, and TicketFly.com has your tickets, and we've had a wonderful time here in the UK on this trip. Look forward to coming back as well, and we'll keep you updated, of course, on any late-breaking news on Twitter. Follow me on Twitter, at JRSBBQ, and that, ladies and gentlemen, is what's on my mind, at least all I can tell you. You would really want to know exactly everything that's on my mind today. And Todd Grisham is waiting patiently. We'll have his comments, his interview momentarily. And I want to tell you folks, before we jump on Todd, I got to tip the hat again to Diamond Dallas Page and his terrific DDP yoga. Now is a perfect time to jump on the DDP yoga program because Diamond Dallas Page is offering the biggest sale ever on DDP yoga right now. Dally is giving you 25% off the DDP Yoga Now app, the DDPY DVDs, and all the DDP swag. That includes T-shirts, mats, heart monitors, and hats. So just go to ddpyoga.com/Jim Ross, get all the information you need. And you've heard me talk about DDP Yoga since day one on this program, really. He's done an amazing job building his business and changing lives for the better. You know, we had Mick Foley on this show not that long ago. Mick's dropped 100 pounds, folks. 100 pounds from a guy that had the worst eating habits next to me. And this is a pot calling the kettle black. I get this. I'm not casting stones or throwing him on the bus. I have to work on this myself. But Mick did not have great eating habits. I remember coming to Oklahoma City one time to see his show, and I passed a car near the entrance of the stage area, and I said to my wife, there's Mick's car. How do you know? Because it was loaded with Monster Energy drink, empty cans, and Whataburger wrappers. Those days are over. Dallas has helped Mick like he helped Scott Hall, Jake the Snake, and the disabled veteran Arthur Boorman. So 100 pounds down from Mick, largely in part to DDP Yoga. If it works for all these guys and the Jerichos of the world and the RVDs of the world and Hall and Jake and Foley, why, may I ask, won't it work for you? It will. It will work for you. So take advantage of this huge sale. Save yourself some money. Put some years back on your life. Make yourself feel better. And right now you can save 25% off on the DDP Yoga Now app, the DDPY DVDs, and all the swag. And, by the way, here's some more good news. More good news, folks. But wait, there's more. Buy a max pack today. You'll get 50% off a second one. That's right, folks. Do the math here. You'll get 50% off the 25% that you're already getting. Gosh almighty, that's a great savings. And, of course, with any purchase, you'll get 3 months free of the DDP Yoga Now app. Just go to ddpyoga.com/Jim Ross. And Gordon Stoley, what is that address?
Well, it's ddpyoga.com/Jim Ross.
Welcome back to the Ross Report. Now, here's JR.
I am on with my friend Todd Grisham. And Grish, is this your first time on my show?
Yes, sir. It is.
How are you been, man?
Everything's good. I've transferred out of the ESPN, and I'm now full-time doing Glory Kickboxing and UFC. So back on the road again, but I love it.
So who are you working for? Two different companies?
Two different companies. Glory Kickboxing is, I signed a multi-year deal with them, so I do their events. And then UFC right now is just kind of whenever they have a need for me, they bring me in. I've already done two events for them.
Hey, the kickboxing. Let's talk about the kickboxing first of all. You know, I happen to be a big kickboxing fan, and because I found it to be very fan friendly, it's very action packed. There's very little feeling out period. There's no finding your rhythm period. It's usually just guys beating the hell out of each other, and it can come from a couple different places, which adds to the surprise element. Some great strike. Have you been a fan of this genre for a long time?
You know, I haven't, just because I'd never taken it in. I was a big boxing guy growing up. Used to love Evander Holyfield, and that was it. And then right when UFC started coming along, I started watching that. So to me, kickboxing is kind of the in-between those two sports. So I never really watched it until about a year ago when I heard ESPN was signing up for it. I was like, yeah, I'll go check it out. And, I mean, I fell in love with it day one, and I sent an email to the president of the company, John Franklin, and said, hey, if you guys need a backstage guy or an in-ring interviewer or anything, I'd love to be a part of the show. And next thing you know, they brought me out, and 6 months later, here I am as the main voice of the Glory Kickboxing. It's great.
Wow. Trading cards, magazine covers, limousines.
I'm just hoping the check's clear.
Jet planes. Well, I think you're going to have fun with it, because you get the chance as a broadcaster, which is always fun, to have those bottom of the ninth calls from time to time. And because most of your fights are going to end by knockout or stoppage or some striking.
Well, it's only three-minute rounds. So it's basically, I like to describe it as high-level tough man. Because these guys, you can't waste, like you said, you can't feel the guy out. You can't waste any time.
No.
You've got 9 minutes to get the job done. And I think there's some people that just don't like watching MMA because they don't like the ground stuff. They don't like two guys grinding forever, and they can't appreciate the jiu-jitsu. So to me, kickboxing is perfect for people like that because, you know, you can use knees, you can kick, you can punch, but they never go to the ground.
Here's what I think. I think it's a great sport for a lot of reasons, and one of those reasons is that the 18 to 34 crowd that's sitting home by themselves, smoking a joint, eating some chips, maybe having a beer, can get into this situation because it isn't about, you don't have to worry about the scoring system more often than not in kickboxing.
Right.
It's going to the bar and watching a good bar fight.
Only it is.
Cleaned up guys are wearing less clothes.
And it's so high level. I mean, even if you ask, I've asked a bunch of them, these UFC fighters, like Chael Sonnen, for instance. I said, what do you think about Glory kickboxing? And immediately his eyes got all big. He's like, oh, I love it. I just love it. I mean, the guys that are in kickboxing, their striking level is at such a high level. It impresses even the most ardent UFC fighter.
What did Chael say? I love it. Now, what would they pay me?
Exactly. Yeah. Do they need a color analyst?
Yeah, yeah.
I tell you what, I was really disappointed in his performance, and I love Chael, but that fight he had a couple of weeks ago against Tito Ortiz, I don't know if you saw it, but it was just,
I did, yeah.
He looked like, I mean, you tell me, he looked like he didn't want to be in there, or he'd never been there before, or something was wrong as they were making the in-ring introductions, because he did not look right.
He did not look right. I don't know what the story was. Hey, he's really gifted, man. He's really, really good. And I was... Hey, look, every now and then, you know, I'll get some company will say, hey, JR, you want to get back in the wrestling business on a more of a full-time basis? I don't know. I will. I'm not standing on some principle. It's all about the time invested and the money.
Right.
It's not about, I don't have to go fall in love with the genre. I've been doing it for 40 years. I kind of like it.
Well, when I left ESPN, people were like, well, what do you want to do? And I said, well, I'd love to do UFC. I'd love to just, you know, stay in the mixed martial arts and combat sports. I love boxing. And they're like, oh, well, you know, what if something else made an opportunity? I said, listen, if the WNBA started a network and paid me enough money, I'd be wearing a Washington Mystics jersey right now.
Yeah, or a flannel jacket.
I've already got the haircut ready to go.
Hey, that haircut, buddy, let me tell you something. What the hell happened? I saw your. I was very all jacked up and tuned in to watch your first dance with USC, and on the pregame of the panel deal. Who was there? DC and
I did it with Daniel Cormier and Dominic Cruz, but my first one was with Kenny Florian and Tyron Woodley.
Yeah, I saw
that. That guy is a brick house.
I saw that too. I saw both those shows.
Yeah.
Well, what the hell was the deal in the haircut, for God's sakes?
Just your standard midlife crisis moment. You know, I thought I'm either going to get hooked on heroin or get a bad haircut. I went to the barber.
So since you left my side, me trying to be your mentor, you got a shitty haircut. You got a big-ass MMA tattoo.
I got it in Las Vegas. Actually, it's a 1920s era type, bar fighter guy that... He's got tattoos all over him. He's got bloody hands and blood coming out of his mouth. And I don't know. I figured, hey, since I started with WWE for the last, you know, whatever, 15 years, all I've done is talk about two guys fighting.
Yeah.
So it's either WWE, I've done Friday night fights, I've done kickboxing, I've done MMA. So I figured, you know, let's do it.
Wow, you're well on your way to becoming the next Mauro Ranallo.
Maybe. I've got to be bipolar first, though.
Well, you know, hey.
He's a bipolar rock and roller.
He is, and it's not too late.
That's true. Maybe I just haven't been diagnosed yet.
Exactly. Hey, look, if getting at my age, where it's hard to get cast in some of these roles, if becoming bipolar were a prerequisite for new work, my ass is a little crazy.
it's hard not to be at least a little crazy having worked for Vince as long as you did. I mean, I tell people this all the time. I would go to work, and I would almost switch my brain onto, I knew what was coming that night, I knew what I had to deal with, and you just mentally prepare for it, and then you go on your way.
Yeah, yeah. We'll go get into that. I want to talk a little about your WWE run, but I'm interested about – Tell me about production day, on how it's like to be on a TV day for kickboxing, and as opposed to your TV day, what you've had so far to experience on USC.
Well, Glory Kickboxing, it's still almost a startup-type company. They've been around for about 4 years, and it's very small. They just got a huge investment from Yao Ming's investment company at $20 million. So they're really starting to spread their wings a little bit now. But it feels like almost, you know, when you start your restaurant up there in Oklahoma, it's kind of like a small family atmosphere, and everybody's pulling for one another because we're all in the same fight. Mm-hmm. So that's the kind of feel it is there at Glory, and everybody does their best. And, you know, we got people there doing jobs that at UFC three people do, you know, but it's just one person. Yeah. So it's kind of that feel, and I really enjoy that. And then you go to the UFC, and, I mean, they've got a wardrobe person for me, a makeup person for me, someone that goes and gets the food. I mean, they're used to dealing with the Jimmy Johnsons of the world, you know, and the Terry Bradshaw. So they treat me just like they would him, which is shocking, frankly. But, you know, they're super professional. Everybody's on point. Everybody knows what their job is. They all do it, and they do it great. And you can see that in the production, because I think, along with WWE, UFC has come a long way. They're about as good as it gets.
No doubt. Hey, look, if you get the other side of your head cut, like the one side of your head, there will be a little Bradshaw influence there. I can see a little something, I'm thinking.
I just need the middle shade, right, so I get the Bozo look.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the Bozo. Ooh. There's some money there, man. Hey, the USC, it's interesting. You came aboard in the exiting of Mike Goldberg, right? Timing-wise, he was leaving as you were coming in. Is that somewhat accurate?
Correct. Yes, his last day was, I think, December 30th. He called the Ronda Rousey pay-per-view, and my first event was, I think, like January, you know, 15th or something.
Yeah, did you know him? Did you meet him?
Well, funny story, when he came to WWE for an audition many years ago, and I did his audition.
Really?
And, yeah, so we spent a couple hours together, and I thought he, you know, did a great job, and from what I've been told, he was made a pretty generous offer, and UFC matched it, so he decided to stay there.
I wonder whose job he was coming to replace.
I don't know. But in doing that audition, I guess they heard me for the first time. You know, I was doing like Sunday Night Heat and Afterburn or whatever. So,
and nobody watched that shit.
No one. And they heard me do it with him. They're like, you know what, this guy's not too bad either. So next thing you know, some doors opened up for me, and I started to climb the ladder a little bit. So in some ways, Mike Goldberg helped me become whatever it is I became at WWE.
And there you go, folks. You heard it here first. Mike Goldberg, job for Todd Grisham.
Yeah, and you were the voice of Raw then, so I don't know whose job.
Everybody was coming after my job, ladies. How sad was my situation? The old fat country boy from Oklahoma, not very smart, Bell's palsy, God almighty, and here comes all these young bucks looking for work.
I remember when they decided to put you in the Hall of Fame, the reaction you were getting everywhere, they couldn't take you off the air with the Indiana National Guard, as they said in Hoosiers. You know, you were locked in.
That's the great thing about what we do. If you're straight with your audience and you give them effort and you don't phone nothing in and you don't try to BS them too badly, and that's from an old wrestling guy, they're very loyal. Because they're used to the bullying and the prejudices of those that don't like their genre. How many times have I been asked in my lifetime that you're really a wrestling? You do wrestling? Did you get it when you were going to ESPN? How'd that wrestling thing go?
Oh, of course.
And what'd you tell them?
I said I loved it. I said it was great. It made me better as a broadcaster. It made me more well-rounded. I got to do things I would have never had the opportunity to do otherwise, and I was there for 8 years, and I wouldn't trade a second of it. That's what I say.
That's a good answer. Now, you and I were talking one time about, was there a plan, kind of a succession plan, where around 2007 was when I went in the Hall of Fame with Lawler, and of course the headliner was the great Dusty Rhodes, baby. But I believe that might have been the time, you and I talked about this once or twice, about the plan was going to be put into motion for me to be, there's going to make a new change in the fall of 2007, I think. Do you remember those days? That Hall of Fame thing, because you were being considered for that role, right?
Well, I was basically told, they were like, listen, JR's leaving, he's going to the Hall of Fame, he's riding off into the sunset, we think you can handle it, it's going to be a couple months, but, you know, they signed me to a new deal, they let me move to Atlanta, because I was just going to be traveling. I wasn't going to be hosting shows anymore. I was just going to be doing play-by-play. So they're like, really work on it, get, you know, dialed in. And then, you know, they kept loving you after the Hall of Fame. And next thing you know, you've been there for like another 6-7 months. And they're like, well, let's put you on SmackDown. So then I started doing SmackDown. And then eventually, I think me and you started doing SmackDown together. And I don't know what exactly happened, but
yeah, see, yeah, I got drafted.
Is that what happened?
Well, yeah, the draft, the draft of 2008, and I was just reminded of it because not too long ago, on Royal Rumble Sunday, I did my little one-man show, and I had people asking about that because they said, "What are some of your favorite moments about San Antonio?" Well, you know, the '97. I think it was 97 Royal Rumble we had at the Alamo Dome did legit 60,000 people. And I say legit, I really mean it was legit. It was a good house. And yeah. Austin won the Rumble and Shawn Michaels regained the WWE title, blah, blah, blah. Two great Texas players winning big in Texas. So it worked out real well. It's funny how that shit works. And then the last Raw before 9/11 was in San Antonio.
Oh, yeah.
And that was a week that none of us will ever forget, no matter where you were.
You couldn't get home, right? You were stuck in Texas, right?
Yeah. We flew the company plane to Houston. That's where SmackDown was going to be. And then the tragedy was on the Tuesday morning of the night of the show. And so we ended up going live on Thursday. And, man, that took a monstrous effort to get that cleared because of security issues.
I bet.
And there's still a lot of unknown questions, unanswered questions, should I say.
And I would assume that Vince's jet wasn't allowed to fly anywhere for a few days, correct?
No, and it wasn't even able to fly us back on later in the week. We had to get a bigger plane that was, for some reason, more security sound or something. I'm not real sure. But we finally got home like on like Friday because we did the show on Thursday. I did the show with Heyman. Heyman and I did the show. And it was Cole and Taz's show. And, you know, we didn't go pitch for it, but we were told, you know, you guys are doing the show tonight. Vince wants you two out there. And because it was a unique show, and not that they couldn't have done it. Hell, they'd probably knocked it out of the park. I'm not saying that, but, you know.
Right.
You know, Vince, what do you say?
You say, yes, sir.
Yeah, okay, good. Let's go to work.
Yeah.
So
he's the boss.
So anyway, when in 2007, the fall of 2007 came and went, and you didn't get your bump up to the marquee position, then do you have an ensuing conversation then with Kevin?
I did. I was hosting the Diva Search that year, and we were out in California, and I saw Kevin, and we were talking. I just said, hey, what's the latest with JR? And he's staying. Is he going? And he said, essentially, well, you saw the reaction he's been getting. He said, there's no way we can take him off the air now. He goes, just be patient. We'll find something for you. In the meantime, you know, I was hosting the Diva Search, which certainly didn't suck. So some people would be like, they told me this is my job. I'm doing this. And I'm one of those guys like, I'm getting paid. He's a legend. You know, let him stay as long as he wants. I'm not going anywhere. I'm just laid back like that. Maybe some people would have been a little different about it, but it didn't bother me in the least bit.
That is a good, admirable philosophy for you. You might maintain your sanity longer with that house full of kids and all that travel you're going to be doing longer. But mark my words, your surface will crack at some point. I'm kidding. You'll be all right. You're going to be all right. It's just a guy. Hell, it's just a job, man.
Well, you know what's different? People ask me like, what's so hard about doing wrestling and you know, as opposed to announcing another sport? I said, in other sports, you're thinking about what should I say? What can I say? When you're doing WWE or wrestling, you're not only thinking what should I say, but what can't I say and what shouldn't I say?
Mm-hmm.
So it's two sides of your brain working at the same time. Like if a guy jumps over the barrier to enter the ring and you're like, oh, that's Joe Schmo. But wait, am I supposed to say it's Joe Schmo? Am I supposed to pretend I don't know it's Joe Schmo? Mm-hmm. As opposed to if someone jumped in the octagon, you know, Tito Ortiz jumps in the octagon, I'd be like, oh my God, it's Tito Ortiz in the octagon. What the hell are you doing?
Yep.
You know?
You're right. I told people this. I said, you like doing boxing? Yeah, I like boxing. It's easy. Because more often than not, I mean, the intent is you're either going to get hit with someone's right hand or their left hand. And
exactly. In
pro wrestling, there's a lot of damn moving parts, man, that you got to deal with.
Look, one similarity, though, between the two, you'll probably agree with this, is you've just got to know when not to talk. You know, boxing is kind of the same way. There's times when you can tell that story. There's times when you shouldn't say anything. And the same thing with WWE, you know, when you taught me that, you know, when the crowd's heating up and they're chanting, what am I going to say that's going to be better than that atmosphere they're providing?
Nothing. None of us have anything good enough to supersede a packed house of enthused, emotionally invested, rabid fans. The greatest. And that, hey, look, I just described the reason most of us still do this stuff. You know, I'm getting work now in a variety of places, but I said, if I'm not any good, then replace my ass. Hell, I'll go back to Oklahoma. I don't have a problem doing that.
Well, you know, I never lose my temper. And along that same vein, I was calling the biggest kickboxing fight in the past 15 years back in December. Badr Hari, the bad boy out of Morocco, taking on Rico Verhoeven. A huge deal over in Netherlands. It got like a 67 share in that country. Big in Europe. It was on pay-per-view here. Anyway, so it was kind of my first big event. I called for glory. And as the Badr Hari's making his way down to the ring, all the other fighters had come down the ramp. What he wanted to do, where he comes down through the crowd, right? With, you know, it was going berserk. It was sold out, 15,000 people. So I had, you know, stuff in my mind to set the stage as he's coming down. Look at him. He's in a bubble. Whatever it was I was saying. And the producer gets in my ear while I'm saying that to something along the lines of, you know, I'm trying to describe, you know, what the environment is like right now. And talk about so my color commentator starts talking, and I hit the talk back button, which mutes my voice. I said, let me fucking do my job. And I just lost it because, like, that's your moment when you're calling a fight. When that guy's making his way down to the ring, that's where you tell the story. That's where you set the moment. That's your time to shine.
Yeah, it is. No doubt
and
about
I was
it.
Like, you got to be. I mean, you hired me to do this. Let me do it. And we had a conversation afterwards, and he's totally on par with me. But that's probably one of the few times I've ever lost my temper.
They have to. They meaning the producers, the bosses, have to believe in their instincts that they hired the right guy.
Yeah.
And if they believe in their instincts and they have you prepared, now I need to back off your ass. I need to leave you alone so you can process everything that you've gathered here.
The only thing I want you to interrupt me is if I'm calling somebody by the wrong name or there's something you're trying to get me to notice that I'm not noticing. There's two kids sitting each other in the front row and I'm talking about the, you know, cotton candy machine. Yes.
Right. Yeah.
Jump in my ear. But as far as like, describe the environment. I'm like, don't.
Yes, environment. You think a diehard kickboxing fan, you think he cares about the environment? He wants to see two guys beat the hell out of each other.
Oh, yeah.
And make me really anticipate this. Build them up. Why should I stay tuned? You know, by God, I can go to Weather on the 8s. Don't threaten me.
I feel like I'm 41 years old now, and I feel like I've almost gotten second level, kind of where you probably got at some point in your career. Where I'm not just thinking about describing him coming down and what's going to happen. I'm thinking, odds are these guys are going to have a rematch. I need to give them some good lines for the promo for the next fight. You know, I need to start giving them little sound bites that they can use when we have the rematch. I'm thinking about that stuff. You know, I'm not thinking about, look how many people are wearing white shirts in the crowd. You know what I mean?
Hey, we got a lot to cover here, and I want to talk about the XFL documentary, a little bit more about USC, WrestleMania. And my man Todd here is a relationship, folks, with Vince McMahon. And we'll do that after we talk about TrueCar and the TrueCar app. Okay, folks, you're looking to buy a car, okay? And you want to make sure that you're getting a real pricing, you get all the correct info on actual inventory. It's very important, actual inventory. Unfortunately, a lot of the times that isn't the case. People configure cars online only to find out later that they're not available. What the hell? They're not available. With TrueCar, you get real pricing on actual inventory. And this is not pricing offered by TrueCar. This is pricing offered by an actual dealer. And not just any dealer, but a TrueCar certified dealer. With TrueCar, you can easily find the car that you want, see what others in your neighborhood paid for the same vehicle, and feel confident that you're getting a fair price as well. Over 3 million cars have been sold by the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network. There are over 13,000 TrueCar Certified Dealers nationwide. TrueCar also shows you all of the specific dealers' incentives before you get to the lot. So when you're ready to buy a new or a used vehicle, folks, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. And Gordon, what's the rest of this? Well, some features are not available in all states. Okay, one more quick piece of business before we get back to Todd Grisham. And business will pick up. Todd's experiences, relationship with Vince McMahon. Jerry Briscoe, McMahon, Mr. McMahon. Is Mr. McMahon there? Love Patterson and Briscoe. In any event, I know a lot of you guys like to be in the know. God, we love the dirt. I love the dirt. When it comes to the Ross Report, you want to know what's going on, right? Damn right. So that's why Podcast One has created a new automated email system for this show. Sign up free at Podcast One, podcastone.com/JR. There you go, Ross, you son of a bitch, talking about Jay. Everything's JR around this damn place, you egg-sucking dog. Well, you get everything you need, Terry, for the Ross Report delivered right to your email. Do you have email, Terry? You wise-ass old bastard. You'll never miss an episode. You always know what's going on. You always know who we're talking to and what we're talking about. And the best way to stay connected, and it's really simple, painless, free, is to be up to date with what's going on. Just sign up at Podcast One, podcastone.com/Jim Ross. Does that make you happy, Terry? How about Podcast One/JR? Podcast One/JR, Terry. Damn you, Ross.
Hi, I'm author and director Mick Garris, inviting you to download my new podcast, Postmortem, to hear from the greatest filmmakers and creators of your worst nightmares. Check out new episodes every other Wednesday on PodcastOne.com, the Podcast One app, or subscribe on iTunes.
Well, we're back. We had our nap. We're good. I feel better. How do you feel? All right?
I do. Full release.
Good. Attaboy. So, did you see the XFL documentary?
I have it on DVR. I'm so excited to see it. I just haven't been able to sit down and watch it. But everyone has told me they loved it.
Yeah, I almost spoiled it for you. It was good, though. I think I found it to be very accurate.
Did you get to tell your story about having to go to the bathroom?
No. They didn't even call me. I didn't get interviewed.
Oh, well, you got to tell that story.
I wrote a little blog about it, and I said, I had a lot of stories about my XFL days because, as you could imagine, the schedule that we had, because it's like I was doing Raw. I had to go to SmackDown because I was in charge of the talent roster. I was an executive committee member, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
And then doing football. And then on Fridays was my travel and prep day, and Saturdays were game day. And then I got the death knell when they took Matt Vasgersian off the A game and put me on it in week two. Then we had the goddamn power outage and a game that goes two overtimes. And then it was just, and of course, then the media, I was one of the first guys that they gut and quartered. Vince was always the biggest target because he was the loudest.
Yeah.
The most visible. And me, I was that wrestling guy. And what the hell's a wrestling guy doing calling football, for God's sakes?
Well, didn't they have Jerry Lawler doing color commentary?
They had... The first week, they had Matt Vasgersian and Jesse Ventura on the primary game. They had Lawler as my partner.
Now, did he play football in college or anything?
No.
No. I mean, what was the thought process? Just like a hype? They needed a hype man?
Yeah, he was added entertainment content. But he's a student of the game. He's a football fan. And other than, he's... Cleveland Brown fan, but I don't know, does that make him a football fan?
No, I get it, but if I'm just average guy turning on
personality,
television, I'm like, why is Jerry the King Lawler?
Because at the time, JR and the King were doing some quarter hours that exceeded Monday Night Football on Monday Night Raw.
Yeah.
We had a massive audience, and we were dominating the prime demo that all those sports programs that your shows want, my shows want, the men 18 to 34, we want those guys, 18 and 20.
So you agreed with that. You would rather have, you thought doing it with Jerry Lawler would be better than getting Joe Montana to do it.
Well, first of all, we're making $1,500 each a game, so I don't know you might get Joe Montana from Sheboygan, but not the football player Joe Montana. So, yeah, I didn't have a problem with it because, look, I knew I was going to do the football heavy work, the stats, the game prep, watch the games. And I knew that Jerry was amazing at feeding off things he hears. He was very, very creative, very quick, And so I thought he'd be fine, and he was fine. But yeah. He got tired of making $1,500 a ball game and had to travel and add that to his Monday Night Raw work with me. I didn't have any option. He had the option to say, I'm tapping. And,
right.
But his big deal, the reason he left the – it wasn't that much fun for him, and he was making $1,500 a game. He makes more than that going to some high school gym in the middle of –
signing pictures, right.
Well, hell yeah, and wrestling for 5 minutes or whatever he wants to do. So it was a matter of – it was economics in that situation. Now, Coach had a good time. I thought
well, he was banging a cheerleader from
where. Oh yeah, he was. Coach was. Hey, Coach took up the mantra that Vince. You know, Coach's always been a team player. You know, Vince is his guy. And when Vince said, "I want you dating the cheerleaders," Coach took it for damn literally.
Oh yeah.
So it gave more power to him. So anyway, then after that first game, they perceive excursion doo-dooed the bed. And so I go back to my hotel. We don't have a cell phone, so my phone rings. Figures Jen calling my wife, and it was Eversoll and Vince, and that's a pretty auspicious phone call to get if you're on air talent. At late night, because you don't know. Wait a minute, am I getting fired?
Right.
So anyway, I did that. That happened. It was a fun thing. I'm sorry. I'd like to talk to you more about it, but I don't want to ruin it for you. You're going to enjoy it, I think. I'll tell you this. When you see the last scene of the documentary,
okay,
where it's Eversoll and Vince in a two-shot having dinner, and you're eavesdropping over their conversation, that it's just a casual conversation,
okay,
everything will come together. I think you'll say,
"Ah,
there's the payoff." So I thought that was a nice payoff. It worked out pretty good. But, yeah, I didn't get to – they would have called me for it. Now I'm
surprised about that.
Me too. I'd like to have contributed. I would have been happy to if I'd been asked with no problems. I did get – they flew me to Charlotte, ESPN, and their group flew me to Charlotte several months ago to do
Ric Flair?
Yeah, about a half a day of that.
Oh, how good's that going to be?
Oh, man. Golly.
It's got to be – I know it can't be uncensored, but to me it's got to be real. It's got to be the real Ric Flair all – every single layer of the onion peeled back if they really want to knock it out of the park, because you got to tell the whole story.
I wholeheartedly agree. And what a story to tell.
It's unbelievable.
Have you followed Rory Karp's work? Rory Karp, RoryKarpf.
Is he a writer?
He's the director of the 30 for 30. He's doing the Flair piece. He did the Christian Laettner 30 for 30.
I hate Christian Laettner?
Uh-huh.
Great.
And but Rory's a genius. And this piece of business, just he and I casually chatting about it, I mean, he's gone deep, deep, deep undercover, man. He's got Rick's very first wife.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he goes all the way back to the very first wife. He talks to Rick's first two children.
You know what's great about Ric Flair is that once you get inside, not even inside a circle, but once he knows you enough to where he's calling you by your first name and you have a beer with him at the bar, he is unfiltered. He doesn't hold anything. He'll tell you anything you want to know, and you'll hear him talking about stuff that you're like, should I be hearing this right now? You know, he's just amazing. He's just a trusting guy in a non-trustworthy job or occupation. You know what I mean? He just trusted people too much, I think, and that kind of was his downfall in some ways.
Yeah, he was very, very generous.
Yep.
And foolish for this money more often than not. You know, but. Golly, a lot of us can say we were foolish on some things. I've been married 3 times. I've had bankruptcies. I've had a lot of challenges. I've had Bell's palsy 3 times. I did a lot of things that I didn't want to have, and I've had a lot of things that I brought on myself. And somewhere along the way, you just got to figure this is not working. I got to take this other route to get to my destination. And
exactly.
I think some of us determine all that later, Todd, than others. And I'm not so sure that Nate's just quite at his new routing yet. I don't know if his GPS is still working. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, his whole life has been really being the life of the party. So what? It's almost like Ray Charles. They asked Ray Charles one time, when are you going to retire from music? He goes, never. He goes, well, if I retire from music, what do I have? I have nothing. That's me.
Right.
I think partying and being Ric Flair is his life. I mean, he'll be 90 years old, and if he can't go to a party, he's going to be like, what's the point of living anymore?
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm with you. He's as unique a personality as I've ever met. And I'm going to be at WrestleCon at on the Thursday of WrestleMania week, which is going to become crazy. That whole week of WrestleMania has become a its own entity.
Everyone's there from everything just trying to pick their little piece of the pie.
Damn right. Now, when I would remember, do you remember when you and I would do a pay-per-view? I always had more get-up-and-go, I felt it anyway, at a live pay-per-view than I did when we did a live-to-tape SmackDown.
Oh, of course. It's a no-brainer. Plus, you're on your toes when you're doing pay-per-view because once it comes out of your mouth, it's gone.
Right.
SmackDown, as you know, was a tape show. You say something completely idiotic, they change it, and half the time, even if you said something that you liked, they decided later they wanted you to say it differently anyway, so you'd have to go into your little home studio and change it. So it was that safety net there that you had on SmackDown that you didn't have with a pay-per-view.
We would do those little home studio things. I saw that unit back in my house. It's
like a CPAP machine, isn't it?
It's bigger than that. I got a CPAP machine too, but it looks like something Marconi built. So you didn't see the XFL. Sorry about that. But you'd probably got to taste that somehow or another if you'd been there then.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, Coach told me, they just said, hey, you're doing the sidelines. He's like, cool.
Yeah.
And to him, $1,500 a week was great. You know, he was like 27 at the time, 26.
All right.
You know, hey, $1,500 and I get to hook up with the Orlando cheerleader. Sign me up.
I'm not, blowing snot at the $1,500 payday. But when you're working, if you look at the calendar, I would literally, during that football season, I was working every day. Every day.
Yeah.
You just look at the calendar, and it's like, yeah, you had to work there. Football Saturday. Friday and Saturday's football.
Yeah. And even when you're not working, you're working.
Right. Yeah. So it was hard, but I had a great time. And, I did Brian Bosworth's audition, The Boss.
For XFL.
The Boss.
How'd he do?
He sucked because he thought they wanted to hire Brian Bosworth. And I was I was a smoker at that time, and I went out in the back of at the Edit One. Back in the back between Edit One and Tommy Carlucci's house. And we did our quarter. We all did the same audition, the fourth quarter of the Super Bowl, pitting the Tennessee Titans and
St. Louis Rams.
St. Louis, the fastest show on turf. And all of us in the fourth quarter. So I told those guys, they said, well, God, we were really disappointed. We really had high hopes for Boz. And I said, I need to have a smoke, but let me talk to him. Maybe we can do it one more. Can we do another one more time? Well, look, we got him here. Why not? Let's see if it works. So I told him, I said, Brian, they're not really interested in hiring Brian. They're interested in hiring the Boss. I said, I don't even know they know who the Boss is, but they know who they think the Boss is from all those pictures.
Yeah.
And your actions and all, NCAA, communists, whatever, all the stuff that you espoused and went crazy about. And so he went back in and became attitudinal and started making fun of Dick Vermeil crying. It's great.
That's good.
And he got him a job. He got him the job. How much of yourself or how much can any of the anchors at ESPN, how much can they be themselves? How much of your own personality are you allowed to write in your scripts?
Well, it depends on what I would say. As long as you stay out of the political realm, they give you pretty good leeway for the most part. It depends on who you are. Just like, in WWE, if CM Punk grabs the mic and goes out there and says something crazy, it's like, oh, wow, that's great. It's crazy. But if, Zack Ryder does it, they're going to beat him down. So it's kind of that way at ESPN. You write your stuff, and then they got a coordinating producer who kind of reads through everything. And if there's something that he's or she is not too keen on, they'll talk it over with you. But I'd say for the most part, 95% of the time, I said what I wanted to.
That's good, right?
Yeah,
I like that.
Good.
Yeah, you get to express yourself. You can't say, well, I never got to show my true self.
Well, now when I say 95%, I would say 95% of the stuff I wanted to say within context of me thinking, well, no, I can't say this. Like these guys on Fox, Dan and Dave, the guys on Fox Sports 1.
I've been on their show.
Oh, I think they're unbelievable. It's so great, and I see stuff that they've said, and I'm like, I can't tell you how many times there's been things that I've wanted to say, and I've just been shot down. And you get to a point where you don't even ask anymore. But I think if I was on that show, I could really blossom. Or a show like that, I have a lot of things I think that people would think is funny, but I just, I'm not allowed to even go there.
Mm-hmm.
So. I mean, you heard on Twitter enough. You notice that ESPN personalities, the things they tweet, there's a certain, you know, there's a certain line you can tweet up to and be fine, but you cross over the other line and you'll get beaten down. So
are they as cognizant as Vince and the WWE is about diversity and making sure, maybe go making double sure that we're cool as far as males and females,
oh, yeah,
ethnicities, and things? Because I'm sitting here, and this is going to probably sound really stupid and country boy, you know, Larry the Cable Guy ignorant, but golly, all of a sudden I'm watching TV and there's names on there of broadcasters that I literally can't pronounce on the first try. And it's, well, I'm not, and they're very good. They're very talented, yeah. And I'm sure they're good guys. But it just seemed like all of a sudden it was like this great big mandate went through corporate, and boom, all these guys are there, and they're all of really unique diversities, which is fine.
Yeah.
I think it's fine. But my point, I guess, in this rambling is that they all seem to come together at the same time.
Well, to me, I don't mind. I don't, if you're good at your job, I don't care where you're from, what your last name is, what you sound like. I don't care. What bothers me is if someone gets put on the air or takes a job where the sole reason they got that job is because of the way they look or the way their name is pronounced and not how good they are on the air. And I think there's a lot of people you can watch and you can say, wait a second now. Is that talent level match where they're being spotlighted right now? You know, sometimes there's some question marks across all genres, I think. But I'm a big fan of if you're good enough, get the job.
I have this theory, uneducated, unfounded, I will add, that Chris Berman has been forced out. Now, whether I'm right or whether I'm wrong, I just can't see him fading away into obscurity because he's such a part of the fabric of ESPN. But, you know, I'm sure he makes a hell of a lot of money, and, you know, he's been there a long time, and he's not as striking as he was perhaps when he's younger, you know, all this stuff. The same thing with Musburger.
Yeah.
he's going to retire, and we've come to the decision. When are you retiring? After next season? No, next week. Oh yeah, this Wednesday. What?
Well, he has that big gambling venture now going.
Yeah.
So that's
it. Well, here's the point. He wasn't ever going to retire. He always had something else to go to, and I'm just saying that him leaving ESPN, which is a great platform for him, for Brent Musburger Enterprises.
Yeah.
Him leaving that platform, I don't think was voluntary.
Well, he was one of those guys who liked to speak his mind. I talked about that earlier. There's certain things you can talk about, and you have to be on one side of that issue. You can't be on the other side of the issue, or you get beaten down.
You think
he was on the other, you know?
Yeah.
When he basically said, I mean, it was a great line. 20 years ago, no one would have blinked an eye when he talked about the quarterback from Alabama, Dayton, Miss Alabama. He's like, kids, grow up to be a quarterback.
Yeah.
You know, because she was so beautiful.
A.J. McCarron.
I sued him for it.
Catherine Webb.
Yes, Catherine Webb.
How do I remember that? You let yourself bastard?
they crucified him for that, and he wouldn't apologize. He's like, it's ridiculous. You can't call a woman beautiful anymore.
You know, we played Alabama in the Sugar Bowl that year.
Yeah.
My Sooners.
Didn't go too well.
No. Well, hey, we were set. Thanks to ESPN, we won that game because they love telling everybody that Oklahoma really doesn't have a chance. We shouldn't say this about our own network game, but, you know, the Sooners are 17.5-point underdog, and it could be worse.
Now, didn't they jump out? I vaguely remember I was sitting in Minneapolis, Minnesota, watching. Didn't Oklahoma jump out to like a 21-28-0 lead or something crazy like that?
Yeah.
Something crazy, yeah. They were 17-point underdogs.
Yeah, well, they got ahead, and then it got to be academic in the story deal.
Yeah.
Anyway, I just think that Brent's got so much to offer. You know, it's just funny how these older guys, and I'm sensitive to that now because I turned 65 in January 3rd, and I don't feel old, and I'm all my medical stuff's good, and you know, not smoking, and I'm not drinking as much. I have social cocktails, of course.
No, right.
Of course, you know, I'm a broadcaster. Of course,
right.
Of course,
you
drink.
Have to live.
Right. So I'm feeling good, but man, I'm going to miss Vern Lundquist. I'm going to miss, Brent
Dick Emberg.
Oh yeah, well he's been gone a long time though. See.
Well, he was been calling for Padres games the last couple of years. I know you're not a Padres fan, but
Padres are not big in Oklahoma, Todd.
No, not this year. Huh?
Not this year. It's about every two or three-year thing for us.
Well, hey, I grew up with Vern. I mean, you know, being an SEC guy, I mean, he was the voice. You know, he was like grandpa.
When you were a little kid, do you remember SEC football on TBS?
Jeez, I remember it on Raycom. I don't know if I remember it on TBS. Didn't they always get, like, the Vanderbilt game?
Probably. Yeah, something like that.
Like the fourth choice or whatever.
Yeah. Suckenhine Teat. USC business. So you are a freelancer that does work with USC. Is that accurate?
UFC essentially said, "Hey, we have some events coming up. Can you do them?"
Yeah.
And I said, "Yep, I can." They're like, "All right, we're going to give you a few shows, and then afterwards we'll reevaluate and see kind of where we're at." So I've done two. I've got two more scheduled, and then I guess we'll see where I'm at.
Cool. Well, I'll be pulling for you. All this audience will. What's your your buddies? You have a beer. They ask you about your WWE days. I'm betting that people probably are more curious about your WWE days than perhaps they are your ESPN days.
I would say so. I mean, still, if people recognize me, I get recognized every now and then, not to your level, but I would say at least 70% of the time I get recognized is from, "Hey, wrestling guy." So, I mean, I was there for years. And, you know, they all want to, and I don't mind answering questions, but people just, sometimes they don't read body language well anymore because they're so into telephones, into cell phones now. Mm-hmm. They can't tell when you've got stuff to do or when you're done. You know,
yep.
You probably come across this. "Hey, here's a question, JR." "Sure. Here's a question. Okay. And you kind of do the, "All right, well, hey, nice to meet you." "Hey," and then they keep going. And eventually you kind of got to be rude. And then they probably come off thinking you're rude and you're being a dick. But you're just being a human being, right?
Then they go on social media and say, "That Todd Grisham's a dick."
Exactly.
He's at Todd Grisham MMA if you want to scald his ass.
Yeah. We had a conversation for 10 minutes at the Sitco while I was filling gas up, and it was 7 degrees with a wind chill of -5. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You can never win with that crowd. But, I mean, I like I said earlier, those wrestling days. I mean, I won a Slammy, for God's sakes, JR. The hard work paid off.
I am so proud of you, Slammy. So proud of you, son. So proud. My God. I won one, too, for a Oh My God moment for my dance routine with Michael Cole in the ring. That got massive ratings and really helped the company solidify its own financial portfolio for that year.
Oh, man.
My angle with Michael Cole. You're so lucky. And you know from riding with me, I never wanted to be in a physical angle with anybody. That was never my thing, man.
Yeah.
And I wasn't trained for it. I didn't get up and down very easy. But nonetheless, what are some of a couple of your favorite go-to WWE stories? Did you have anything with Vince that they asked about? Did Vince get in your ear and produce you? Did he ever get in your ass about on your IFB?
I remember one time I was, you know, I mean, I prepped so hard. It was never a lack of trying or never a lack of interest. Sometimes you go out there and you sit there with the headphones on, you're like, "I just don't know what I'm supposed to say. You know, I don't know what's going to be the that a boy and what's going to be the what the hell are you thinking." So you just do your best, and there were shows where I'm like, "I am killing this." And I remember one time I was calling a match. It may have been next to you. I don't know. But I'd done all this prep work on whichever the guy was who, you know, he's getting up every morning and training. He does this, blah, blah, blah. I was all into it. And Vince goes, in my ear, while I'm still talking, "Are you purposely trying to suck this bad at your job?" And you can't answer him because you're on worldwide television.
Yep.
So, you know, the match goes on for another 20, 30 seconds, and then I start talking again. He goes, "You know what? Shut up. Just shut up. Don't talk again." So I shut up for the rest of this, like, 15-minute match, and then the match ends, and he still hasn't said anything to me. So I'm like, I hit the button. I go, "Vince, am I allowed to talk now?" He goes, "Not yet." I couldn't talk for another 5 to 10 minutes. Then finally goes, "Talk." And now I'm jarred. What am I going to say? He goes, "Talk." And I just start talking. I don't know what I said, but that, you know. And then some nights, as you know, you wouldn't hear a word the whole 2 hours. And
right.
You'd be like, this is great. I actually enjoy this job. Then the next week, every 30 seconds. You know, I remember one time I was, you know, they like just to kind of sync up with the website and the magazine and bring stories forward from there. And John Morrison, who also is known as Johnny Nitro, was having this match, and his finishing move was called Starship Pain. Well, WWE.com did a story on where he got that name, and he's like a free spirit from California, and he writes wrote poetry on the beach. So he wrote a poem called Starship Pain, right? So he was a heel, apparently, at the time. So I start going into this story about how he's a poet. And I can hear him. He opens up my ear, and I believe yours, JR, and he goes, "Is he really talking about fucking poetry during this match?" And, of course, I'm halfway through the story, so I got to keep going. And then he starts telling you to save me, so you start jumping in, and it was just a complete catastrophe. But I was chastised for talking about poetry during a WWE show, so I learned my lesson that night.
Did he throw in the analogy that you can't make the people – people aren't going to fear him, or he's not going to be a badass or a tough guy?
Oh, yeah.
Because he writes poetry.
Yeah, he said something along those lines. But I'm like, well, then why are they writing stories on WWE.com about it?
He probably wasn't aware of it. He probably didn't know it was on there. You know?
Right.
So,
but, you know.
But the next call was to the guy that wrote the story on .com.
Yeah,
you know,
people
don't understand how ubiquitous Vince is. He isn't. He's everywhere.
Yeah.
And for a guy that's north of 70, and he's still, you know, great shape and all that good stuff, you know, by and large, he's had some hip issues I've heard lately. But, he's everywhere. You know,
I've said that when people ask me what is he like, and, you know, we all know he's a workaholic. I said if it was humanly possible or if he could somehow make it happen, he would be every single person on Raw. He'd be the camera operator. He'd be the referee. He'd be both of the workers in the ring. He'd be the producer, he'd be the director, and he'd be the announcer. Right. If it was possible, he would do it all.
Yeah, and the other thing, he would never sleep.
Why would he?
He would never sleep. I saw him. We were some late night. It was like late night. I mean, we'd been there since 9 o'clock in the morning. It's like 9 o'clock at night. He calls me, you know, JR, what are you doing? It's like 6 o'clock. Hey, hang around a little bit. I want to talk to you. Okay. It's like 8:30. My wife calls. Dinner's on the table. You know, I'm sorry, honey. I'm waiting on Vince. So we're just shooting the breeze. I mean, it's like two guys, just he and I. Everybody's gone.
Yeah.
And they're in the office shooting the breeze, talking about life and all kinds of – he didn't want to go home, I don't think. I don't think he couldn't get enough. He had a little bit more juice to give, so JR's there, so I'll help him expand his horizons. Now, quite frankly, a lot of those conversations are really, really good.
Were you uncomfortable? See, I would be uncomfortable. I'd be thinking, please don't ask me another question.
He challenged me product knowledge, information-wise. He challenged me educationally in that regard. And I think, at times, I challenged him. I think that we both had a real good head for the wrestling business with different philosophies that sometimes when they came together could really produce something really special. That's my take on it. But that's he's a unique cat, man. But he told me that conversation. He said, "JR, sleep is our enemy." I'm sitting there in my goddamn eyes, so I feel like my eyes have, you know, barbells on them. I'm dodging off. Well, my head's dotting like a mannequin or something. But
his methods of delivering criticism and the volume, I would never encourage anyone. But I would say 90% of the time, you're like. You step back and you're like, you know what? He was right. I mean, he made me become a lot better at what I did, and he always kept you on your toes because, like, almost like a 8-year-old kid, you're like, I don't want to get yelled at by my dad.
Right.
You know, now if I screw up at ESPN, I'm like, well, you know, whatever, I got another day tomorrow. But you did not want him to yell at you.
No, you're right, and you're right, and I believe that people there fall over themselves, even though they may think that in their mind that they're making the wrong decision. Or they're withholding an opinion that might be diversive or divisive, that they do all they can to make Vince happy. And and sometimes to the detriment of Vince even and the company. And he hates that. I can tell you that. He hates that. Hey, I told him, he said, it's like that some big angle. We're going to have a meeting after the production. I go, so let me chat with you a minute. Well, I think that went pretty well. I said, the agents hate it. What? Well, goddamn, they didn't know what I said anything. They're intimidated. Well, I don't.
Oh, yeah.
Why are they intimidated? Well, you know why. Because you're the most you're the most powerful human being in their life. That's why.
You know, I was getting, there was a while there, right towards the end, right before I left, I was starting to feel like he's not on my team anymore. You know, they had demoted me, so to speak, from SmackDown. I was doing NXT pretty much, which was a completely different beast than it is now. And he was just constantly in my ear about stuff. And it, half the time, I was, whatever. So Matt Stryker, who you know, was like, you know what? You should go in there in his office and get right in his face and just unleash on him and say, what you're doing to me is f***ing bullshit. It's f***ing throwing me off my game. What the f*** are you doing? Do you believe in me or do you not? And he goes, and he said, I bet you he'll respect you if you do it. And in hindsight, I bet he would have. If I'd have gone in there, he'd have said, all right, now we're talking. Now we can move forward. I thought you were a pussy. Now I know you're a man. But I just didn't have the balls to do it. So what do you think would have happened if I'd have walked in there and said that?
I used to give guys advice on that matter, the exact matter. I said, when you go talk to the big Irishman, my advice is this. Converse and do not confront. There is a way to converse that cerebrally he will get connected with you, and all of a sudden he sees you're not a dolt. You're not a goof. And,
yeah.
you got enough balls to make a nice presentation that is counter to his, but you're doing it in a respectful, business-like presentation, of which he likes.
Yeah.
So that's what I would have said to you. But, you know, but there's a way to do it. You should have. You could have always. But if your presentation was professional, there's
yeah.
no reason you couldn't have made that happen, man. You couldn't have, that could,
right.
could have worked. Is he the most unique guy you ever worked for?
Oh yeah. I mean, but it's hard not to cower in front of somebody like that.
I know,
you know,
man.
They,
oh, yeah.
They own the whole. They own. It's not like an ESPN where there's, you know, 75 chiefs. You know, he doesn't like you. Well, this guy likes you. Or this lady likes you. At WWE, and pretty, I'm sure at UFC, if Dana White hears me call my fights in 2 weeks and says this guy sucks, I don't want him here anymore, I'm gone.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a one man show. So, yeah.
Dana's got some Vince properties. He's got
some,
and I say that in a good way. I like the hey, my dad was an alpha male. I'm writing my book right now, and I've had to relive all this stuff. I've been around so many alpha males in my life that when people ask me questions about how Vince was heavy handed and he made you join the Kiss My Ass Club in Oklahoma City and you got the blah blah blah. But look, he looked at me like a character, a TV character. And then when I walked back through the curtain, I ceased being a character and I was an executive. It was a hard line to walk, but I couldn't take it too seriously at the end of the day. But during my tenure there, there were times when I got pissed off, and I was I was angry. So, Now, hey, look, I asked this to Taz when Taz and I were partners. He did all the driving. When you and I traveled together some, right?
Oh, yeah, we traveled, I'd say, for probably almost a year together.
And you drove, right?
Oh, yeah, of course I did. You weren't driving anywhere.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen. The old guy didn't drive it. Nope.
Oh, man. Hey, no, we'd hit all these. You'd always hit, like, a not necessarily a cracker barrel, but something along those lines.
Yes,
you'd hit one of those, and then I'd get my ranch dressing on the side.
Oh, God. And then goddamn ranch dressing, for God's sakes. I thought I could do one show and not talk about the ranch dressing.
That's redneck ketchup where I come from.
I hear you.
I can eat a shoe if you dip it in ranch.
You have, and you can. Hey, so anybody says, do you have a good JR story?
God.
Did you impersonate me like you do Vince?
No, I don't. I'm trying to think of a time. You were always kind to me for the most part. I heard horror stories. But I guess if I'm your personal driver and your chauffeur, you're not going to say too many negative things about me.
We bonded over the ranch.
I mean, but most of the stories I have about you are ones you've told me about stuff that has happened, like that XFL story when you had to go to the bathroom, but they had the two announcers basically in the crowd in the middle of the audience, and you didn't have time to run to the bathroom and come back. And I said, well, what'd you do? And you said, I shit myself.
Well, you know, hey, what are you going to do? And you're just on a live national. Hey, there's a picture floating around out there. I was wearing this XFL shirt and khaki slacks, and the big deal I had was, you know, I couldn't. The press box was not the press box. It was in the middle of the 50-yard line, lower level, and you're a long way from the bathroom. So when I would go to the bathroom wearing that black hat, I didn't have any security. Ventura would have the Minnesota State Police with him. He'd get him right through the crowd, right in, like he was, you know, Charlton Heston parting the Red Sea, and he'd pee-pee. And he would come back. He was all happy. He's making $1 million a year. He wasn't making $1,500 a game. So I didn't have anybody get me to the bathroom, so I couldn't get there and back in time during the halftime. So I had these.
Well, you got to deduct a new pair of Dockers from that $1,500 a week you're making.
Damn right.
Now you're $1,450.
So one of those Tommy Roy, I remember with the golf producer for NBC, big time golf producer, was one of the producers, and he took a picture of me smoking a cigarette after the game, and with my pants where I urinated on myself all over my khakis, and I walked right out of the press box, the booth, right through the crowd, right off the field, right back to the back of the stadium, and with no shame, where I looked like I'd pissed myself, and guess what, I did. So what are you going to do?
Now that's the story they needed in the XFL documentary.
There you go. Exactly.
That's gold.
Yeah, man. And, hey, there's another time. You'll really identify with this one. I'm calling a game. I have my IFB, my little internal ear thing, for you that don't know. And at one time, this is no exaggeration, no embellishment whatsoever, but unbeknownst to the other, I had five different people talking to me simultaneously in my IFB during a live ball. The ball had been snapped. The play was in progress. And I'm the play-by-play guy trying to put a narrative to this action. And I got Vince on my ear, Ebersole in my ear, John Gonzalez, who says he invented the camera, the sky cam.
Right.
Tommy Roy, the aforementioned, and Bill Bunnell. Bill Bunnell works for ESPN now. He's the producer of the A-game, so to speak. He's got Herb Street and Fowler.
Okay.
So all five at one time. So the question, the follow-up is, well, who did you listen to? I said, are you crazy? Vince McMahon is who I listen to. I got to get on the airplane with him. He'll be back in my ear tomorrow at the pay-per-view and Monday at Raw. So it was a I look at those experiences, that stuff like that made me a better announcer.
Someone asked me, I can't remember what it was. Maybe it was Glory. They wanted me to do something outside where there's people or whatever. Are you comfortable with this? You sure they didn't know about it? I said, are you kidding me? I said, I once hosted a pre-pay-per-view show for WWE in the foyer of whatever stadium it was. I want to say it was in Lexington, Kentucky. Maybe it was Louisville, Kentucky. And they're counting me down. It's me and Maria Kanellis hosting the show, right? They're like, in 5, 4, 3. And they wanted to look like College Game Day. All the wrestling fans are at 3, 2, 1, and go. And I go, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to. And as I start talking, the crowd starts chanting, F*** you, Grisham. Clap, 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 clap. And there's people surrounding me basically chanting for my death as I'm smiling ear to ear going, what a night it's going to be. We've got a steel cage match. I said, there's nothing you can throw at me. There's nothing you can say in my ear that I haven't heard times 10. When you have Vince McMahon yelling in your ear and WWE passionate fans screaming in your face.
It's nothing in the world like it. It made you better, and you're doing a hell of a good job now. You got any more gigs you're going to get? Any more companies you're going to go to work for?
I don't know. Hey, I'm just trying to make the Benjamins, JR.
I hear you.
You know?
Is Ronda, what's the scuttlebutt around the MMA world? At Grisham MMA, you should know this answer. Is Ronda Rousey going to fight anymore, or you think she might be done?
I mean, personally, I don't know her well enough to answer with any sort of definitive guess, but I would think that she's done.
Yeah.
I mean, does she want to come back and fight the number 12 ranked female that they know she can beat? Because that's what you want to do. You can't bring her back to lose again. You got to bring her back to fight a Becha Kohea, who she destroyed. Got to be somebody on that level. These girls now, they've caught up to her. These, you know, Nunes and Kenya and Shevchenko. They're legit. Holly Holm. Is she going to come back and fight Holly Holm again, make a lot of money? She could, but odds are she can get absolutely destroyed again. What's the point?
I think she has to, if she comes back, and I'm not even advocating that, and I love her. I think she's been so good for MMA. Every woman that's in the business should kiss her ass.
Yep.
And I'm sure some of them would really dearly love to.
Right.
And I mean that in all my heart. And not there's anything wrong with that, but you know what I'm saying. And I think she's just great. But if she doesn't,
awesome.
Now the fighters know how to beat her. And if she doesn't do things to sore up those perceived weaknesses, i.e. striking defense, she should be, say, adios.
Well, right before she lost to Holly Holm, she wanted to be champion of everything. And now it's like she has to, and when she would win fights, she was almost like kind of like John Jones does now whenever he's not doing what he's doing. He's fighting in the octagon. She would try and beat them at their game. She got kind of bored with it, I thought. So with Holly Holm, she stood up and decided, I'm going to trade with Holly Holm and show them that I can beat a world champion boxer with strikes. she got destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she's got to almost swallow her pride and say, you know what, this woman is better at me at striking and striking defense. The only way I'm going to win is to use my judo skills, take her to the ground, and ground her and pound her. It's almost like you've got to say, that's the only way I can win. I've got to tackle like a bulldog. And I don't know if she's willing to do that.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't know either. She might not be comfortable, even though it might not be the right camp, she might not be comfortable in another camp.
Right.
Her camp now is not working for the. If you base it on results.
Yeah.
And the last two fights have not been positive. So I'm just saying that I don't think that's working, but I don't know that she feels comfortable enough to go to a new camp and start over at her level. So
yeah, I mean, and a lot of it's mental. I mean, you've been around Hulk Hogan and The Rock. When you get to that level of celebrity, your brain kind of changes on you a little bit, doesn't it?
It can.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, well, have you met Conor McGregor yet?
Yes, interviewed him. Great guy.
Yep.
He gets it.
Does he remind you of one of the boys in wrestling? As far as understanding that he's got to promote and put asses every 18 inches and get people to buy pay-per-views, he understands, seemingly to me, the secret of being a salesman.
He does, which was a little disappointing that he was so against doing the media, because he should be able to say to whomever, I don't want to do quite as much, but to say I'm doing none or I'm only going to do one thing, that's what people pay to see as much as his fights. They want to see him talking that smack. They want to hear him verbally jousting. And I mean, he absolutely destroyed Nate Diaz verbally. I mean, he would say something to Nate Diaz that was like eighth level, that, you know, he spit out like seven straight sentences that rhymed, and then Nate Diaz would basically just say "F- you," and everyone laughed. But to me, the big draw for Conor McGregor, I mean, if he had the personality of Frankie Edgar, one of those, I'm putting my head down, I'm going in, I'm doing my job, you know, I'm a Lance Storm kind of guy from WWE.
Mm-hmm.
No one's watching him.
Right.
They're watching him because he's got the Roy Jones Jr., Muhammad Ali talking. I mean, that's what they love.
Right.
And he's so good at it.
He really is. Boy, he's a superb. He's a natural. And that's a great thing about, I say this about wrestling, you know, if you get a wrestler like Austin could talk and Rock and so many other guys, Ric Flair, you know, love so many great, when they cut their promos, it didn't sound like they were working me. It sounded like they were really sincere. They believed in what they were saying, and therefore I didn't think I was being duped.
Yeah. Well, think about the Mayweather fight. Anyone with any level of education in any fighting sport whatsoever, which I like to think me and you both have, realize Conor McGregor had zero chance to beat Floyd Mayweather in a boxing match. But they would sell probably 4 million pay-per-views just because McGregor would be able to talk everyone into buying it.
It will be a huge financial success. It will be underwhelming artistic success. And you're right. Conor can't beat Floyd. And they'll make a good story. He's got a longer reach. He's a little bit bigger, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
But you're right. It won't be a pretty fight. But I believe it'll be. Hey, it might be more entertaining than Chael and Tito.
Yeah, or be more entertaining than Mayweather and Pacquiao.
Yeah, it'll be better than Gaga 5000 or whatever his name was, Dada 5000.
He almost died that night.
And he did.
Well, I tell you a fight that if he's gonna go into boxing and have one mega fight, I'd rather him fight Manny Pacquiao, because Manny Pacquiao will come right at him. As you know, Mayweather's a counterpuncher. He'll lean back against the ropes, let McGregor throw punches and then stick and move and stick and eventually just beat his face to death, whereas Pacquiao will come out guns blazing from the opening bell. That would at least be fun.
Mayweather
will just be a snore.
I think if they had that fight, you and I should call it.
It'd be great.
I would give them a good rate.
1,500?
Maybe 1,500 a shot. You know, that's the old XFL rate.
With security to the bathroom included.
Yeah, no kidding. Now that I've had prostate surgery in my 60s, I've got to address all those issues. Hey, I've kept you a long time, and I really appreciate it. I've enjoyed the visit. We covered a lot of territory. I had fun working with you back in the day, and I hope that some of our experiences were at least could be somewhat helpful in your broadcasting journey as you proceed in life.
Oh yeah, I mean those moments in the car together. I mean, just like with wrestlers, the old territory days. You travel from city to city with the older guys and just talk. You learn the business. You learn what to do, what not to do. I mean, we kind of had that same thing for a good year. You know, where I'd hear you telling your stories, I'd hear you telling your mistakes and the things that have helped you along the way. And it certainly, I've taken some of that and applied it to my life and to my career. And, you know, look at me now. I'm stuck in Connecticut.
I'm still in Connecticut. And I can't get good ranch dressing to save my soul.
Well, listen.
I'm glad things are going well for you. Glory Kickboxing, you catch Todd Grisham on Glory Kickboxing. When's your next fight?
My next event will be back-to-back weekends. I'll be doing Halifax, not this weekend, but the following weekend. And once I leave Halifax, I head pretty much straight to Chicago, Illinois for Glory.
Sounds good, man. And
all right.
What about UFC?
UFC is in Halifax.
That's Halifax. Okay.
That's
cool.
Halifax. Yes, right, sir. That'll be Sunday, February 19th at the Scotiabank Center in Halifax. And then the following weekend, which will be, I guess, the 24th, I believe, I'll be in Chicago, Illinois for Glory.
Cool. All right, man. Well, listen, folks can follow Todd Grisham at Grisham MMA on Twitter. Hey, I really appreciate your time. I'm proud of you. And if you know, if you ever need me for anything, I'm a phone call away. But I appreciate you taking the time to be on our show. It's always good to catch up with you.
Yes, sir. It's an honor to be on it. Thanks for having me.
It's always good to talk to Todd Grisham, one of my favorite guys to be around. I'm really proud that he's doing well. He's got a happy family. Sad that he has to live in Connecticut, but that's another story. I'm only kidding. The Nutmeg State's fine if you like traffic and weather together on the 8s. But I like Todd. He's doing well. He really enjoys kickboxing, as you could tell. We'll see how far his journey in USC takes him, but I'm firmly in his corner. I'm glad he's doing well. Next week here on the show, I'll be with the big guy, Ryback. Ryback will be joining me here next week, and Lord knows he's got a lot to talk about. Not only his career in WWE, why he left, how it went, what he's doing now, what his goals are, his nutrition business, a lot of really unique things going on in his life for the big man from Las Vegas. So Ryback on the show next week. We'll have a really good, thorough, honest, upfront conversation that I hope you'll tune in and join us for. So, and as I mentioned earlier, tickets are still available for my two ringside shows in Orlando, WrestleMania weekend, April 1 and 2. Before that weekend, I'll also be at WrestleCon on Thursday afternoon on the kickoff ceremony with Ric Flair and Sting. And our man Matt Stryker is going to host the Q&A. So Sting, Flair, and myself will be doing a Q&A on Thursday of WrestleMania week at WrestleCon. How can WrestleCon get any bigger? But it seems like it does. What an amazing event. And then on Friday, the folks at WrestleCon are rejoining Jerry Lawler and myself for a nice meet-and-greet photo op thing on Friday morning at WrestleCon. So you can check out WrestleCon website for all that information. And you can also get more information on my shows at in Orlando at Plaza Live at our website. You know that website, right? You don't? It's that website you never visit. It's the world's loneliest goddamn website, jrsbarbecue.com. I write many blogs each week, and you can check those out. And I answer Q&As. I'm one of the few people actually in wrestling that run their own site, write their own blogs, and answer their own questions. So I hope you'll check it out. It's a free site, jrsbarbecue.com. We also have, I mentioned earlier about the What Culture YouTube page, which is a killer. Over a million subscribers. You should really check it out. And I also have a YouTube page. It doesn't have a million subscribers. I wish it did. It's free, jrsvideos.com. And it's free to subscribe to. I saw a lot of barbecue lovers here in England because they use americansoda.co.uk to get their JR's products delivered right to their front door. And, of course, if you're elsewhere, you can shop with WWEshop.com, and they'll ship your sauce, ketchup, mustard, seasoning right to your door or your office. It's great gift items, too. I got some signed Rob Schamberger art cards that we personalized and signed. So check those out. Again, you guys have done a hell of a job helping me support these sponsors, and your support of the sponsors that makes us click. And that includes Amazon. They've been with us since day one. I am on show 157, 157 shows. This show has lasted longer than some of my relationships in my previous life. It's a hell of a deal, huh? Amazon. I've been with us since day one. And you can find all my sponsors along with my Amazon links at Podcast One, podcastone.com. All you got to do is click on the Killer Deals button at the top of the page and then hit the – no, don't hit it. Drop the bionic elbow, baby, on the Ross Report button. Now, I got links to Amazon UK, where I am now, Amazon Canada, where Stu Hart resides in spirit.
Yes, I'll never die because I'll stretch anybody's ass that tries.
No doubt, Stu. No doubt, buddy. You'll live in my heart forever. And Amazon USA. Every time you buy something through my Amazon link, Amazon will kick back a little money to us to pay our production cost. That ain't cheap. Don't cost you a thing. Free. No hidden fees, no hidden charges, no nothing. That's how you help us. And we appreciate it very much. So keep listening right here, folks. The 60-second AP News headline, that's coming up next. Again, next Tuesday, a new show drops every Tuesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. on the West Coast of the United States of America. And so if you subscribe to at iTunes, by the way, it's free to subscribe. They will automatically download my show the moment it drops into the device that you choose. So that's at iTunes. Subscribe for free to the Ross Report. So next week, Ryback, we're going to ask him a lot of questions, a lot of your questions that you've tweeted me. He will be presented with. I think you're going to be very happy with what you hear and the honesty of the big guy who is, you can't judge a book by its cover. If you think he's just a big, muscled-up dude with no brains, you might want to think again, and I think next week will prove that on this show. Good guy, and he's got something to say, and we're going to provide the forum for him to say it, and I hope that you will listen. So that's it for here. We've had a really great weekend. Monday night in Leicester, my first time to Leicester to do a little TV for What Culture. The Sunday night pay-per-view was outstanding. If you didn't see the pay-per-view, you can still see it on the Fight app, video on demand. Go to the premium service at What Culture, and they can tap you right into that as well. You owe it to yourself, if you're a real wrestling fan, to see and you want to watch wrestling and not hear BS and you know, indiscriminate talk. We call the wrestling matches, for better or for worse, we call the wrestling matches straightforward. We call what you are seeing, and I think that helps. It keeps everybody connected. At least that's our opinion. So check that show out, What Culture is True Destiny. You'll thank me later because it's really a strong wrestling show. And the matches that we mentioned, that angle, you know, it's emotional for me to be able to say I signed Kurt Angle right after the 96 Olympics, and I had built a great relationship with him. He's from Pittsburgh. My wife is from Pittsburgh. There's that bond in that respect. But I really got teary-eyed at the end of that show because I realized that I will never probably – ever call another Kurt Angle match as long as I live. I call so many, and I helped bring him into the game, and he's made everybody so proud. No amateur ever went from amateurs to pro quicker and more seamlessly and more efficiently than Kurt Angle. He's really a blessing for all of us wrestling fans. So I got a little teary-eyed there when I thought about the fact that this is kind of the end for my calling Kurt Angle matches. It's not the end of me calling matches. I could damn sure guarantee you that. But I'm going to miss Kurt in the ring. He's just amazing. And I'll tell you this. If Kurt Angle doesn't have one major match in WWE, as Gorilla Monsoon would say, it will be a massive miscarriage of justice. Kurt Angle can still go one time as good as anybody in the game. Anybody in WWE, anybody anywhere else, he can go. As Toby Keith would say, I'm not as good as I once was, but by golly, I'm as good once as I ever was. And Kurt Angle fits that description. So we love Kurt Angle. I love the opportunity to call this match. And again, you didn't do this thing a cappella. Anybody that thinks Alberto Del Rio can't cook, you ain't smelling what he's cooking. So good stuff. Good weekend. A lot of fun here. Look forward to getting back home. And we'll be back with you next week with Ryback. Again, thanks very much for being with us. Do something nice for somebody today. You'll feel better when you do. It doesn't take a whole hell of a lot of effort to be a decent human being. Our world needs more of that. And make sure that you maximize life's minutes. It's real simple. And the key thing is, remember that our tomorrows are never guaranteed. So from the Hilton Hotel in Milton Keynes, England. I'm good old JR Jim Ross saying thank you so much, folks, for joining us. And so long, everybody.
Thanks for listening to The Ross Report. Download a brand new episode every week at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.